Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner. Glad to be back from vacation and really grateful for the work that Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault and Carmen LeBurge did in my absence. It was fun to listen to them streaming through the app down in Florida as my family and I spent about 10 days in Disney World going through the Magic Kingdom and Epcot, Animal Kingdom, and then spending our last day there at Universal Studios doing some of the Harry Potter rides and all of what's down there. It was a delightful time. So special thanks to them, and it's good to be back in this host chair. I was a little concerned that I was going to be Wally Pipped out of this deal. If you don't know who Wally Pipp is, he was the first baseman for the New York Yankees who begged off a day of work at first base, and he was replaced by a guy named Lou Gehrig, who ended up staying in that seat for about 12 years after that, and Wally Pipp never saw the field again. So with the good work that Paul Perreault and Carmen LeBurge did here on Faith Radio Mornings, I thought I might be Wally Pipped out of this chair. And speaking of Wally Pipp, we also have a guest this morning that might do just that to Ben Johnson, our regular Thursday morning guest here on Faith Radio Mornings, who does such a great job out of the Acton Institute talking with me about the news and the special interest topics of the day. But Ben could not be with us this morning, so we are pleased to be joined by Dr. Jordan Baller, who works on economics and other sorts of monetary theory for the Acton Institute, which is, if you know, if you listen, they're an organization that really tries to sustain our country by promoting religious principles and individual liberty. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning. Thanks.
So this is it. I mean, I know Ben has been a real regular for the show. Jordan joined me on Thursday mornings, but you know, so what have you done for me lately? This could be the Wally Pipp moment for Ben this morning.
Yeah, you know, athletes also talk in cliches. They say things like taking it one game, one day at a time. So this, every streak starts at one.
It does. Well, this could be it. We'll play Ben the podcast and we'll see how he does compared to this. But are you a Disney guy at all, Jordan? Or have you been down there recently?
No, I've actually never been to Florida, believe it or not. And I wouldn't mind. It's about 20 degrees here in West Michigan this morning.
So. Yeah, I woke up to snow this morning, too, and about 15 degrees here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul. And it was nice to be in the 80 degrees down there. But I'll tell you what, there's a lot of people that go to Disney World. The crowds were pretty thick last week over Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah, I can believe that. I assume, too, that it's a bit of a shock coming back to this weather because your body adjusts. You know, when it's 40 degrees in November, it's not quite the same thing as when it's 40 degrees in March.
Yeah, it's really true. The shorts don't feel quite the same way right now in studio when it's 10 degrees here. Well, appreciate you joining us this morning, Jordan. I know when we come back from break, what I want to get into a bit is while we are away, of course, it was Thanksgiving week, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners, too, participated in Thanksgiving. And then the day after, we saw Black Friday, and then through the weekend, with Cyber Monday, and we've seen some really interesting trends in terms of the way people spend their money in the holiday season, not going to the store so much, or rather buying through sort of internet channels and different sites. So I want to get your take on that when we come back next on Faith Radio Mornings.
This is my right, a right given by God, to live a free life, to live in freedom. Talking about freedom.
It's about 9 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to the show for the 29th of November. We're joined at this time by Dr. Jordan Baller of the Acton Institute, who is replacing Ben Johnson this morning. Ben has been such a great, faithful guest as part of the show and does such a good job breaking down so much of what's in the news. He's away this morning and recommended Jordan to be part of the show. Talk a bit about some of the economics that are happening in our country, and including Black Friday through Cyber Monday. Jordan, what did we see last weekend as people were hitting the internet and shopping? I know we did a bit of that from Florida, and I couldn't tell if we should take the deal now on Black Friday or if it was just going to get better on Saturday or Sunday or Cyber Monday. I was mostly confused all weekend.
Yeah, it seems like just as Black Friday has bled into Thanksgiving Day over the last decade or so. Now Cyber Monday is bleeding into Black Friday, and they're increasingly indistinguishable. Cyber Monday really started in about 2005 or so, the early 2000s was a big push to move a lot of retail. And especially this last quarter of the year, it's so important for retailers to determine whether they make a profit or not. As a kind of a long shopping weekend. And, one of the things we saw and has been an increasing trend over this last, decade or so is more and more of these purchases are from retailers online via the internet rather than brick and mortar shopping. And I mean, you still see some of those videos where people are getting trampled and so on. But, you know, one of the things that happens when we move online is it's a little more orderly. Maybe you're in a queue or maybe you're on a wait list, but you're not actually physically pushing anybody out of the way or trying to defend yourself to get the latest deal.
Well, certainly it was an adjustment for my wife Hallie and I as we began to do some of our Christmas shopping a few years ago online, because we're sort of used to touching and feeling some of the products. But over time, you kind of get used to the idea of hitting the purchase and reading some of the reviews and feeling okay about it. Is there a sense in which there's certain products and certain kinds of things that people are still going to the stores to get at this point?
Well, I think anytime you have to try something on, that makes a big difference, obviously. My wife has been shopping for snow boots, you know, and she actually walked around yesterday with one boot from each of two possible pairs on each foot. So she had mismatching boots for part of the day yesterday, trying to figure out which one was going to keep her foot warmer. And I asked her, you know, she finally decided which one she was going to keep. And I asked her where she got the one that she was going to return. And she said, Amazon. I said, oh, so we're going to have to pay to send it back. And she said, actually, no, for shoes, you know, you can send them back for free, because I've had to return things and you end up having to, even if you get the free shipping on the front end, you may have to pay $8 or $10 to return it. So there are those kind of calculations that naturally go into shopping. Anything, yeah, that you're going to have on you, and fit is really important. People are, you know, still tend to, if not, purchase from a physical brick and mortar store, at least try on somewhere via the mail or go into a place.
And in terms of how competitive this marketplace is to try to drive traffic to different websites, I mean, I don't know about you, Jordan, but my email box was completely stuffed for those 4 or 5 days. It seemed like I was getting maybe 5 or 6 emails a day from certain stores that are brick and mortar stores. And they were saying things like last chance, last chance, last chance. And funnily enough, the next day provided another last chance to get that savings and the next day after that. So, I mean, it's getting pretty competitive out there, isn't it?
It is, and I mean, you know, part of what makes this such a phenomenon is this sense of urgency. And there's a kind of a thrill about getting a deal if you've been looking for something. So I think the retailers are working at that angle, and it really is important to them. So on their side, there definitely is an urgency for retailers, because this really is the most important time of the year. This last 6 weeks determines whether they're going to finish the year in the black or the red. And, you know, a lot of the margins for these companies are quite narrow as well. So this really is an important time. And so some of that urgency is getting communicated to the shoppers too. And, it really can turn into a frenzy.
Well, and certainly, and you reference how important this time is for retailers, especially some of those that may be teetering on the edge. I think about a store like Sears that has been part of my entire life and well before I was born as well, and they are absolutely on the edge at this point. And what do you recommend for people when they shop in terms of looking at different stores in which they might make their purchases? Because if that store isn't going to be around 6 months or a year from now, if they can't quite get into the black this holiday season, there's really no way to have support or any kind of return policy from there.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the key challenges in the kind of economy that we live in now. It's such a dynamic economy that has very positive parts to it, but it can also have some really negative parts to it when there's such turnover between firms and jobs and so on. You know, it's really important, I think, as Christians, when we're thinking about what we do when we buy something and think about the whole process. You know, we don't have to do that every single time we buy any single thing. But it is good, especially at a time like Thanksgiving when it's a holiday and you've got a little bit more time perhaps to reflect about things, about the good gifts that God has given us, where these things come from, the human labor and action and effort that's been added to these things to create value, and how value's been created all along the chain, how many different people have
worked together at various points in the value chain to create this final product. You know, one of the things we miss when we buy something online is that human interaction. And you know, whenever I see the person drop off the mail or the UPS truck or the FedEx truck, I, you know, smile and say hi and thanks because they're bringing me something good. But often, you know, we just come home and there's a box there. So you don't even get a chance to give a token of gratitude really to the person who's delivered that final product. So it is important, I think, to think about the human realities that are behind the screen and the clicks that we make and the kind of demands really that we have as consumers that we place on retailers when we respond to things. I mean, the reason they're sending us so many emails is because some non-zero percentage of people are clicking on those emails and clicking on those deals. And, so there's a, you know, some success that they're enjoying there. And in many ways, they're just responding. They're responding to the economic demands. They're responding to what the customers want. And to some degree, the customers do seem to want deals on Thursday night or Friday or all through the weekend.
Jordan, you make a good point, too, about missing out on the relational interaction, and we just end up dealing with screens and virtual kinds of relationships. And I would be curious your take on the ethics of going into a brick-and-mortar store, maybe developing a relationship a bit with the salesperson and doing your shopping there and getting all of the information and then saying thanks very much and then heading home and finding a different site where you can just buy it at the lowest price. I mean, do we lose some parts of our soul on some level when we sort of use the relationships that then get to the financial bottom line for us?
Well, I think we could for sure. And if you feel weird about it, then that might be telling you something,
yeah.
Right? I mean, if you
yeah.
feel a twinge of, boy, maybe I should have patronize this establishment. You know, that may be communicating some kind of important information to you. At least it's communicating that you need to think about it a little more. And get a sense of the reality of what a blessing these kinds of stores are. The ones that still have brick and mortar, doors and windows that we can enter physically and see and pick up things and handle them before we have them shipped to us. And, without those things, we really would be impoverished in a very literal material sense. So it is important to attend the kind of things that will sustain a community over the long term and are not just in your narrow self-interest, material self-interest and bottom line in the short term.
Yeah, that's well said. I think if we descend into just transactional relationships with each other only, we miss out on the humanity of all of it, and we do end up impoverished, as you mentioned. This is Jordan Baller, from the Acton Institute, filling in for Ben Johnson this morning, and we're talking about some of the economic trends and some of how we can maintain our Christian views and values in the midst of what is just such a crush of economic pressure and capitalism during this holiday season. Jordan, we'll take a short break. Come back, we'll change the topic a bit. I know that the United States has been meeting with Mexico and Canada recently to try to reframe the old NAFTA trade agreement between the different countries. And there's been some pretty interesting hidden regulations in some of these conversations related to sexual orientation discrimination. So I'd love to get your take here next on Faith Radio Mornings about how that got into the language of this free trade agreement. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 29th of November. Great to be back in the host chair. And again, very grateful to Paul Perreault and Carmen LaBurge for doing such a great job filling in during the time away over the holiday season. And we're talking with Dr. Jordan Baller this morning of the Acton Institute about some of the different financial conversations in our country. And Jordan saw something that I was completely unaware of until Paul sent me some of the research on this, and that the United States and Canada and Mexico obviously have been trying to draft a new trade agreement between these three countries. And in doing so, it appears they've been hiding on Canada's behest some different kinds of sexual discrimination language in the free trade agreement that would affect us in terms of how we can walk out life in our country with the gay and lesbian conversation. So kind of talk our listeners through all of this that may not be aware of this situation.
Right. So the background is NAFTA under the President Trump's administration has been renegotiated. The new agreement is called the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. And you can think of it as a kind of a NAFTA 2.0 or something like that. But in general, these trade deals are very complex. I mean, I just pulled up the text of the deal. There are 34 different provisions. with a bunch of annexes and side letters and things like this. So, you know, on one level, free trade is a very simple kind of concept. If I want to sell you something and you want to buy it, then we are in principle free to make that kind of voluntary exchange. This is the idea behind free trade agreements between nations. But they are in reality, and not just in the abstract and in principle, very complex and detailed instruments, especially when you add more than one nation. So they're not just bilateral, but you've got a zone or you've got a number of countries that have relationships. It gets very complex very quickly. And so buried, you could say, or part of the, you know, the long prose of these kind of bureaucratic agreements is a kind of a provision to elevate sexual orientation and gender identity to a level of protected status against discrimination in economic environments.
Well, I would have to imagine that this might not be sitting well with President Trump, who recently was working on some language in which he was going to narrow some of the definitions of gender to a more traditional binary of male and female, as opposed to the fluid continuum that many people are arguing for. Is there going to be some tension, obviously, between the United States and Canada on some of this language?
Yeah, so it seems as if this language got placed into the agreement from the Canadian side. And either it wasn't noticed or it's only just been discovered lately. Yeah, you would think that there's going to be some debate about this in large part because it's an example of a much larger and broader debate about these kinds of issues at different levels of government. So there are some states and localities that have specific provisions, anti-discrimination provisions that include sexual orientation, for example. There's nothing at the federal level that has that kind of a provision, so it's been more of a locality, municipality, and state level kind of an issue. And there's been great debates at those levels about whether or not it's right to carve out these kinds of considerations as special classes for legal protection.
And certainly, do we see this the new trade agreement coming and taking shape and being effective between the three countries to a certain degree? I think about the migrant caravan situation down at the southern border between the United States and Mexico, where President Trump has threatened to shut down the border and obviously end the commerce flow between the two countries. And there was quite a bit of tension between the United States and Canada around a number of conversations maybe 6 months ago. Is this going to be something that's going to hold water here moving forward?
Well, I mean, I expect these negotiations continue to be hard line in the sense that they are negotiations. They really are, again, the longer the agreement is, the more words there are in the agreement. In one sense, you could say the less free the trade agreement's going to be, and the more politically motivated and the more political rather than economic the calculation is. So these really are political negotiations, and those are endlessly complex, and you can expect that to continue. One of the things that does concern me about the specific elements of the sexual orientation, gender identity provisions that have been proposed that are included here is the danger that of increasingly defining who we interact with in commercial and economic terms based on some sort of political ideology. So what I mean by that is, you know, we're only going to shop or do business with or employ or work for people who agree with us or think like us on all kinds of different issues. We know what that's like when we take that kind of an attitude with visible characteristics. So, you know, you get things like segregation and apartheid in an extreme form if you decide I'm only going to allow people to do business with me who look like me. It's not so obvious when that's more of a way of thinking. But there are similar dangers when we have that kind of an attitude about interacting with people who are different from us on a host of all kinds of different, characteristics, you could say.
Well, and certainly as part of this too, Jordan, we have just a couple minutes left here. I know that when it came to shifting pronouns to describe gender, and that there is at least 40, 50 different ways in which people can identify from a gender standpoint, that that really created a lot of havoc in some universities in our country where professors maybe weren't familiar with the 40 or 50 ways in which people would identify themselves and really got into trouble from a discriminatory standpoint, not using the right pronoun for one of their students. If this goes into our normal workplace and everything, that this would be something that businesses and people could get fired for not using the right pronoun.
Well, it's certainly the social pressure. You already do see that between social media and the kind of online mobs and things like that, the responses that you can get. I would say in terms of the legal environment, again, Canada is pretty far down the line as compared to the United States on these sorts of issues, legally speaking. So, it's a different environment in universities in Canada, for example, about what you're legally required to and to do and not do. The Canadian academic Jordan Peterson obviously has gotten a lot of pushback originally about some of these issues, about whether he was going to be legally or socially expected to adhere to some of these new and emerging norms.
Well, it certainly is going to be fascinating moving forward as the social environment has changed so rapidly over the last 10 years to see what's going to happen 10 years from now. Jordan Ballard, capably filling in for Ben Johnson of the Acton Institute this morning. Jordan, thanks so much for joining us. And do tell Ben that he might have just been Wally Pipp this morning.
Well, I'm just trying to hit singles today, you know, so
that's a good.
Have a great rest of the week. Thanks very much.
You too, Jordan. Thanks so much. We'll take a break here for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News. And when we come back for the second half of this hour, I'll be talking with Bob Smetana about the young missionary man who was killed by a very indigenous tribe in a remote part of the world, and whether this was something that was an adventure for him or bringing the gospel, or how we understand that situation. So should be a good second half of this hour coming up on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, bad news for our friends in the Dakotas, and we see that there's going to be quite a bit of snow coming to South Dakota, up to 8 inches possible in some parts of South Dakota, Rapid City, 1 to 6 inches as well. That's not the bad news necessarily for Dakota. If we go just north of that into North Dakota, we see that the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction is working on a bill that would permit students to stay at home on snowy days and use their computers to participate in online learning instead of traveling to school in poor weather. So the wonderful tradition of the snow day, where we're watching and hoping for a foot of snow to get a day off of school, that might go by way of the dodo bird, and our students are going to have to sit at home and not have snow days moving forward anymore. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, Carmen LaBurge, who was filling in for me, was joined by Bill English, our regular Wednesday guest, and they were talking about some of the best tips for business.
Have a transcendent purpose to which your life is tethered. Profits come, profits go. Money comes, money goes. Wealth comes, wealth goes. But purpose, life purpose, does not. So if your purpose is to make money, then you'll be like Han Solo when Princess Leia looked at him in the first Star Wars movie and said, if money is all you want, then money is all you'll have. Right. Mm. And if you know, the things that we really want in life, money can't buy anyways. Now, just a couple examples. Money can buy medical care, but it can't buy health. Money can buy a thrill, but it can't buy joy. Money can buy a house, but it can't buy a home. I could go on and on with this thing. Right. And so what you need to have is a transcendent purpose to which your life is tethered, that is outside your business, that isn't part of your business, that really forms the core of who you are, so that when you're in your business, you're not all about the profits. You're really about using your business for the kingdom of God.
That was Bill English, of course, from BibleandBusiness.com, talking about some of the best practices in running a business and the need to have purpose that really drives what we're doing. If you want to catch that entire conversation, you can head to MyFaithRadio.com and check out all of what Bill had to say from the segment yesterday with Carmen. Always such great tips for those that are involved in business. Well, I see up next we'll be joined by Bob Smetana of Religion News Service, and we're going to talk about the interesting case of the young man, John Allen Chow, who decided to try to bring the gospel to the North Sentinelese people outside of India and was killed. And we're going to get into this a little bit more in terms of whether he was backed properly for this trip, whether it was a bit of an adventure, and how do we understand the situation moving forward on Faith Radio Mornings.
When the storms of life rage, your first thought might be to run, but God commands the opposite. This is Jim Garlow. In Psalm 46:10, the Lord says, "Be still and know that I am God." Easier said than done sometimes when your bills are piling up, when rumors are spreading at work that are damaging your reputation, when you're persecuted for your faith, when your body fails, when you're struggling with depression or intense discouragement, maybe even over the state of our nation, when fear or anxiety overtakes you, or a loved one dies. But that's exactly time to stop and know that God is God. He is always with you in the midst of any storm. The message is God triumphs regardless of your circumstances. As the psalm also says, even mountains falling into the sea are no reason to fear. His promises are never broken. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here, about 20 minutes before the top of the hour on the 29th of November, and we're joined at this time by Bob Smetana of Religion News Service, who joins me regularly to talk through some of the different religious headlines that might impact our conversations here from around the world. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, great. Back from vacation, was down in Florida doing the Disney World thing with the family. Are you a Disney guy at all, Bob?
I'm not a Disney guy, but I was just there right around Halloween to run a half marathon.
You were.
So I spent 3 days there.
So were you actually in the Disney area running, or what was the, were you just in the Orlando area?
So we ran through, let's see, where did we run through the, Epcot, and we ran through, Animal Kingdom and Hollywood Studios. So that was kind of fun.
Wow. I can't imagine making my way through Epcot on the run. I'd stop at every one of those worlds and eat some food. What was your time, about 10, 12 hours through Epcot, or how did that work, Bob?
It was about a little over 3 hours, but it was before the park opened, so there was no food for us.
Oh, that's great. Well, thanks for joining us as you do. I know while I was away, I was following one of the headlines with this young man, John Allen Chow, who went to a pretty remote island outside of India and pretty much recommended to not go there ever. It's an indigenous people that are pretty hostile to outsiders and, of course, was killed shortly after arriving at the island. So sort of talk our listeners through the situation and what happened there.
Yeah, so this man named John Allen Chow, it was the 17th, so he went several times. So he was kind of it took a little while for the story to unfold. He was kind of a mix of a guy, a kind of adventure, kind of going all over the world, doing sort of tourist adventures, but also was apparently doing mission work. Went to this island several times, apparently got shot at by arrows first time, went back second time, and was killed.
And in terms of some of what the blowback has been from that, people have suggested he had no business going to this island, that this was much more of just a young man wanting an adventure. What's been the takeaway from some of this?
I mean, it's been complicated. So so as you know, there's a lot of emphasis in mission work on what are known as unreached people. These are folks who have no exposure to Christianity. So there's been some blowback to, you know, some of these folks are sort of vulnerable folks. So should he go there? Should you be going to that kind of a group? Did he put people in danger? Was he trained properly? There's that question. There's a motivation question. Should you go there at all? Because, you know, by coming there as an outsider, will you hurt people's culture? Will you bring diseases? And the second part is his methods. You know, was sort of showing up on an island that you're not allowed to go to, to people who are hostile and have shown themselves to be hostile to any outsider. Is that a wise thing to do? So there's been kind of two parts of it. Now we're doing some more reporting. It sounds like he was pretty well prepared for this, more prepared than we thought, but it still brought up a lot of questions just over the nature of mission work in general, and then the whole question of methodology. Like, is this the way to reach folks who've never been reached before?
And in terms of that evangelistic zeal around some of this, I know when I was growing up, Bob, and before the world was much more connected like it is today by mobility and technology, there was almost a sense in which that the gospel needed to be brought to all corners of the world. And once everybody had a chance to hear the gospel, that that would help invoke the return of Jesus and the second coming. Do we still, as you're doing your work in the Religion News Service, do you still see some of this kind of language coming out of different religious communities, that we have to travel to all the remote places and make sure the gospel is heard everywhere?
Well, we see that language. You know, we haven't seen so much the kind of hasten the second coming language, though that has been part of it in the past. But certainly there's a push to go to every nation and to reach every and really what they call every people group, which is every ethnic group. I think there had been an interpretation that nation meant country, and then there was a move in the 70s to mean people group, which is a kind of ethnic group. So there is a push to go to every ethnic group. If there's not so much of an eschatological sort of hasten the return of Jesus, but there is a kind of an energy to fulfill the Great Commission among folks. So now there's this question of how do you do that? And how do you do that? And so we had a piece on our site, for example, by a Native American Christian woman who's a speaker who had, you know, a view of this that, yes, missions is important, but how do we do this? And come and, right? Who's the person that should come and do this? And is the way that John came, informed all by Christianity, is informed by his culture too. So there was some questions about. We're getting people who are indigenous being able to speak about missions and saying, "Hey, in the past, missions have been done in a way that's been also linked to culture, so that the person who came to a community to talk about Jesus also changed the brought Western culture." So there have been some folks who are speaking this, saying, now, wait a sec, we have to rethink this and make sure when missionaries do their work, they're bringing the faith, but not all the cultural baggage. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really does. And Bob, it's really interesting. We just referenced Disney and Epcot Center a little bit ago. And you think back to when some of these parks were built, was at a time when the world was not anywhere near as interconnected as it is today. And so you have Epcot Center as this place where you have a chance to go to all these exotic worlds that you would never otherwise know, or you have, it's a small world ride at Magic Kingdom in which you travel by boat through all these different little worlds and you're sort of exposed to all these exotic cultures. But in a world today that is so pressed together and interconnected, I would think missions has really changed a bit to say, hey, you know, we don't want to just impose our culture and our idea and our faith on one another. It's sort of live and let live.
Yeah, and I think there's also probably a sense that, you know, Disney's probably a good example. There's a sense that missions can be kind of an attraction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
People are sort of there for you to come and see, but they're not really people with their own stories and their own culture and their own real lives and their own lives that have been directed with God. So, and then there is a kind of like, what, you know, is there more of a sense among people that, you know, in religion should let live and let live and not try to convert each other. So you got a couple of things going.
It certainly is going to be interesting for evangelism moving forward in terms of the exportation of culture versus the exportation of the gospel. And so it'd be a lot of, I'm sure, conversations in the ongoing religious collisions that are happening around our world. You know, Bob, we got to take a short break. When we come back, we'll change the conversation a little bit. You had a really interesting article on your website. Again, it's religionnews.com for those of you listening. And it was about the Museum of the Bible highlighting a slave Bible that focused on servitude and leaves out freedom. And it kind of gave us a good window into how some of our forefathers in our country were thinking about the faith and slavery. So we'll get into that next with Bob Smetana of Religion News Service on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 10 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we're talking with Bob Smetana, who's the editor of Religion News Service. You can go to religionnews.com. It's a great site for a lot of different kinds of news articles around our Christian faith, but multiple faiths around the world as well. Again, great site for some good and vetted information. And Bob, saw the article posted on your site that had to do with a pretty rare copy of the Slave Bible. Frankly, I didn't know that this Bible even existed, but it sounds like it cut out wide swaths of scripture, and it was given to slaves a couple hundred years ago.
Yeah, so it's at the Museum of the Bible has a copy. It's actually owned by Fisk University, which is here in Nashville. But this Bible, for example, has missing 90% of the Old Testament and half of the New Testament. So it will have, a passage, say, from Ephesians, slaves, obey your masters, but not, say, from Galatians, there's neither bond nor free, for all ye are one in Christ Jesus. So this was in the West Indies, but it really was a Bible that gave, that was meant to give, kind of be a like a Bible for chapel services for slaves. So you'd get prayers, but also what they would get is just verses that would say, obey your masters. So it's really, the whole story of the Exodus, for example, is gone, which is, so you get the Ten Commandments, but you wouldn't get the Exodus. So it's really, and it was done intentionally to sort of keep slaves from reading the Bible at all. Or reading the parts of the Bible, which would be disruptive to the slave trade.
Well,
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and when people in power are not allowing people who might be in this circumstance, they were illiterate at this time and didn't have a lot of accessibility to the text, you can really hold a lot of power over people by them exposing them to what would be called sacred scriptures. Bob, you still there? Good morning, Bob.
Yeah, no, I was going to miss you there for a second.
Oh, that's right. I was just mentioning, Bob, and you brought up such a good point about this text and kind of walking through that they cut out such wide swaths of the text that when people in power are not allowing people that in this circumstance may have been illiterate or didn't have exposure to the biblical text, they end up shaping their view of God in some pretty profound ways when they say, this is the sacred scripture and this is what's in it. So you this is your stage in life and this is where you need to be as slaves.
Yes. Yeah, no, this it was definitely meant to give people a story which would keep them in place. It's really interesting. One of the folks interviewed, so our reporter, Adele Banks, who's a fantastic reporter, talked to a number of folks. She talked to someone from Fisk University, and she had this interesting quote. She said, it's a good book. I still believe in the Bible on the whole, but not this version of it, which was a good summing up of it. It's like, here's people who interpreted the Bible, not just interpreted the Bible, but chopped it up to make it say something it doesn't say. And really removing almost most of the Old Testament.
And certainly, Bob, is there lessons that we can learn about this, too? Because I think about the people who are often in power interpreting the biblical scriptures for us today. We're not exempt from the same kind of dynamic, especially when it's pretty common, I think, for believers to pull certain verses out of the text and ignore the rest of the text and then shape their entire faith around verses. And a lot of times those verses aren't actually saying what we think they might be saying.
Yes, that we see a lot of that. You don't see it as extreme in this way where you just remove the we've seen some scholars do sort of texts that say less verses are less reliable. But we haven't seen this kind of interpretation. But it does make you think about how does culture inform the way people interpret the scripture. And so I would think it would make people now think about how do people let the Bible interpret their lives. And so as a religion writer, you see all kinds of ways that people have interpreted it for good and for bad. We definitely see, we've seen this, say, with the Me Too or some of the abusive ministers we see. We see ministers take passages about, giving honor to the leaders or to prophets and use those that you can't, criticize them. So it's it's always a bigger warning of what's the message of the Bible and how is it interpreted and how is it used.
Well, and certainly we see that in our own culture right now in terms of maybe the most famous verse that we see out of the book of Jeremiah, for example, would be Jeremiah 29 in that chapter about, I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans to prosper you. And people use that often and tape it to their steering wheels when they're going through a tough season of life, assuming that eventually God is going to give them the health that they desire, the relationship they want, the job that they're seeking, and taking that passage, not knowing anything about the rest of Jeremiah. And we teach this stuff that God is here to prosper us according to our individual desires, and that's not at all what that verse is suggesting.
Well, so I'm not a minister, so I don't do Bible interpretation, but yes, there's a lot of the whole book of Jeremiah is not. I would say the book of Jeremiah did not probably have a prosperity gospel life, or the people of Israel during the time it was not a prospering experience for them. They were in exile. They were, so I think it does that. That's you're having a good example of the whole context of a Bible verse and not just one section.
Well, we love the work that you do at Religion News Service, Bob, and just appreciate all the different articles. Couldn't get to everything this morning, but great stuff there. If, again, you're listening this morning and want to go to a trusted news site that covers religion from around the world, head to religionnews.com. Bob, thanks for joining us this morning on Faith Radio Mornings.
Talk to you.
Here, I'll take a break and wrap up our first hour of the show and preview what's coming up an hour or two this morning for the 29th of November. So the fancy word of the day to describe what Bob Smetana was talking about here is the idea of syncretism. And syncretism is when a culture begins to blend its values with a given faith, and in this case, Christianity. So it's a very syncretistical idea. You can try that out on your friends today. It's a syncretistical idea that God is here for our own prosperity from a financial or material or relational or health standpoint, where we assume in America that we're entitled to all of those things. Very different message than what's actually in the biblical text. So there you go. Syncretism is the word of the day. Looking forward to hour two, where Jim Bilby will join me in studio, and we're going to talk about what happens in life when it gets destroyed so suddenly in reference to the California fires.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.